Joining us on today's Innovative Ideas podcast is Douglas Holtz-Eakin, former director of the Congressional Budget Office and president of the American Action Forum. Doug, thanks very much for joining us today.
Thanks for having me, Paul.
Doug, I'd like to talk about a study and an op-ed that you recently put out, and the op-ed is in Bloomberg News. It's on health law needs repeal, and it talks about the impact that the Patient Protection and Affordable Care Act, otherwise known as Obamacare, is going to have on small businesses, particularly your concern that it's going to be a drag on job creation and actually a disincentive for many small businesses to offer coverage or, in fact, drop the coverage they've got today as the effects of the law make insurance more expensive. So just to start off with, small businesses are obviously one of the main engines driving job creation. After looking at the legislation, what are the direct and indirect costs that you expect small businesses are going to face that are going to be most problematic for them?
Well, I do want to emphasize at the outset, I think it's important to look at it from this perspective. As you know, this is not great healthcare reform. It flunks the test of providing quality care at lower cost and expanding affordable quality options to Americans. So having missed the big objective, we now need to look at the law from the perspective of economic policy, particularly toward the sector that's been responsible for 87% of the new jobs in what is so far a pretty lackluster recovery. Here, I think it's pretty simple to categorize the two kinds of costs, direct and indirect, that the small businesses will face. On the direct cost side, there are new taxes, there are mandates that come with associated penalties if you fail to cover your employees, there are big administrative burdens, and offsetting those, at least in principle, are some tax credits that a few firms will be eligible for. The indirect cost side is more complicated. As your research on Massachusetts and other places have shown, we're likely to have higher insurance premiums as a result of this. Employers are going to bear at least part of that cost. They're going to have to rework their insurance packages to meet the requirements of the law. Indeed, some of them may rework compensation broadly and stop providing insurance. And they'll have to deal with an environment that's very confusing. They'll have lots of new rules they don't understand. They're going to have to learn that. And indeed, they may be in a very deficit-ridden environment where they see higher interest rates, higher taxes, or both. So it's not a very pretty picture from the perspective of a small business owner.
And in a somewhat related issue, you write elsewhere, if I could reference it, a study that looked at the potential for businesses, large and small, to drop coverage and put people into the exchanges. And there's some concern, I guess, correct me if I'm wrong here, is that with all of these headaches facing them, potentially more expensive insurance, certainly more administrative headaches, that if you're a small business owner and you can get away with it, so to speak, you're going to throw up your hands and say, good luck, Godspeed, I'm going to give you some more money for your salary, but I'm going to send you to the public exchanges. And that means the expectation is that the spending for taxpayers is going to go up.
I think that's absolutely a concern. Many small businesses are not our most best paying opportunities. They're starting out, their employees are starting out. That's exactly the workers who are most likely to end up in the exchanges. And any small business owner is going to do the arithmetic and think, well, I don't have to pay $12,000 or even $8,000 for insurance. I can pay a $2,000 penalty, take the $6,000 difference, give my guys even a little bit of a raise, send them off to exchanges. Everybody's going to be better off, except the American taxpayer, who's going to be on the hook for a benefit that doesn't cost $1 trillion over 10 years, but might cost as much as $2 trillion over the same period.
Now, to be fair, you do, as you spoke about earlier, spoke about some of the tax credits in the legislation that are meant to offset the impact of the requirement to carry coverage or help small businesses afford coverage. How is the credit structured? Who qualifies for it? And how long can businesses claim it?
So the most important thing to know about the credit is that it is, in the end, available only to those with fewer than 25 employees. And so it is not going to cover all of the small businesses in America. It's covered a small fraction of them. Second thing to notice is that it is, in fact, a temporary measure. It begins in 2010, and you can use it for the 4 years until you get to 2014. And after that, you can use it for only 2 more years at most, and then only if you actually send your folks off to the government-sponsored exchange. So this is a temporary measure on a permanent health care reform, not very appealing. The last feature is that the 35% credit, which is the full amount that a person can get, is phased out if you either have more than 10 employees and ultimately phased out entirely as you go past 25, or if you pay more than $25,000 per worker. It gets phased out completely if you pay $50,000. So in both cases, the disguised impact of the credit is to penalize expanding the number of workers you have or the amount that you pay them by clawing back support on tax credits. These are anti-growth measures buried in this healthcare reform, one of many, which I think are going to come back to haunt the legislators who put it together.
So those are effectively increasing marginal tax rates.
Yeah, these are effective increases in marginal tax rates. The biggest such a tax in this bill is the mandate itself, which is exempted for any firm under 50 employees. That just means when you get to 50, you don't want to turn into 51. It's an enormous tax on the growth of small firms.
And also, just in passing, I understand one of the complaints, I might be wrong about this, but I'm pretty confident that it's true. If you're a small mom-and-pop business, the mom and the pop part don't get to claim the credit. It's not available to family members, owners, the proprietors of the business, or their dependents. So for very small firms that might be, you know, mom and dad and their kids, that's going to leave them out.
That's correct. There's a lot of study that every small business is going to have to do to understand exactly what's acceptable. And so one of the big concerns that many in the small business community have surfaced recently is just the profound lack of understanding and how confused everyone is. Some who are eligible for the credit are going to pass it up. Some who are not are going to try to claim it and get penalized. We are likely to see an enormous amount of difficulties.
Now, moving on in the paper, you talk not just about direct and indirect costs of the healthcare aspect of the legislation, but also there's an administrative aspect to it that's an additional burden that I think Congress stuck on in there to get a few billion dollars more in revenue to make the bill look cheaper than it was, but it's going to turn out to be a huge headache for small businesses. Could you talk about that?
I think this is rapidly becoming the most celebrated aspect of the reform, and indeed it is, I think, already the winner for worst piece of legislation for this Congress, a serious race to win. and the requirement is that any small business that does more than $600 worth of transactions in goods with other businesses must provide their business counterparty with a 1099, a form that says, you know, here's who you are. We did $600 worth of business. We provide it to you. We provide it to the IRS. This has been done for services in the past, and it's been a fairly light administrative load. Expectations are there going to be 40 million or so of these that are going to have to be produced. And even worse, the IRS's own taxpayer advocate has said the IRS will not either be able to process all these new forms, nor will they have any particular good use for the information. It will be a costly administrative burden that will be very intrusive and generate no net benefit from a tax administration point of view. And that's, I think, the really ironic part of this is it has nothing to do with health care reform. It is strictly a tax policy thing, and it was there just for the money.
So on that cheerful note, do you have any sense over the long term how the overall bill is going to affect job creation and the structure of the job market in the U.S.? Maybe this is straying a little bit from our conversation just about small businesses, but about the impact on the economic environment and the job environment in general.
This is a net negative for job growth, for economic mobility, in a couple of ways. The first and foremost impact it will have is it generates large deficits as far as the eye can see. That's the promise of either higher taxes or higher interest rates or both. Those are not good for jobs. It has inside of it mandates and taxes, which are costly for businesses, which will eat up scarce capital, and even if they can maintain their employment, they're not going to have the ability to make productive investments, raise wages, and otherwise improve the standard of living. And the whole series of hidden taxes that are true for those who use the credits, that are true for those who take health insurance in the exchanges, all of those are penalties on getting ahead, becoming a larger small firm, paying better, earning more as an American worker who's receiving subsidies. They all produce penalties. That's bad for the kind of growth and mobility we typically value in the U.S.
Well, that's a great description of the issues here, both intended and unanticipated side effects of President Obama's health care reforms. Doug, thanks very much for joining us today.
Thank you very much for having me.